So today I wanted to talk about something which was related to the overall conceptions of society, the overall conceptions of personal development as related to the responsibility, the ethics, and the morality of it. Now, I don't want to talk about morality in a religious sense. I don't want to talk about ethics in a professional sense, but I want to speak about these things in a very particular way according to the personal responsibility that people have when they learn how to do things which are extraordinary. We have spoken in the last 2 weeks about issues surrounding society and the creation of social associations. And in these conversations, we have discussed about the difficulties of living in a modern world. Because in the modern world, we have situations which are different than in the primitive worlds, but the pre-modern worlds. Now, previously, as we have discussed, people lived together in groups and in communities where they had a lot of association, they had a lot of support, they had a lot of relationships which made them feel very secure in a social environment. But that social environment broke down as society became more modernized, as there was more technology, as there was more, as the electrification of society took place, the mechanization of society. People became more independent from needing others. And as people became independent from the requirement to live together for their economic needs or their social needs, they developed this specific kind of individuality where everybody had his own responsibility for living his life and had various kinds of professions which were more and more specific. So now we have a situation where anybody can develop himself enormously. Anybody can develop all kinds of capacities. Anybody can develop all kinds even of powers. And he does it in a way which can also be economically beneficial. Yet at the same time, we don't have the same kind of social structures around us to regulate our activities. In the pre-modern times, there was like a very enormous and powerful social customary expectation, which kept everybody more or less in line according to their class, according to their family or religion, or according to their social status. But now there's no particular expectation of anybody. There's no particular demand on anybody to live any specific form of expected action. It's up to you how you want to act. Of course, there are still Christian ideals. There are still ideals in how we see each other and how we perceive each other and how we wish to be successful in that perception, certainly. However, it is not that these things really dictate our lives. We have enough privacy, we have enough facility to do what we like on our own. For example, somebody could be externally a very respectable personality in society, yet behind the scenes where nobody can see it or in ways that nobody understands, can be quite degenerate in ways that other people would be very upset. So the different groups, the different associations that are there, religious groups or social gatherings or whatever, or even help groups like Alcoholics Anonymous or other groups like this, they serve a function of giving people some kind of box or parameters within which to live. And when we are within those parameters, everything's all right. But when you move outside those parameters, there are probably economic consequences or basically economic consequences or consequences of relationships which are more important and can, to a certain extent, guide the way we act. But forget all the professional aspects and all the social aspects. I want to talk today about the spiritual implications of all of this. The spiritual implications are very interesting because nowadays, if you really want to have that same kind of control, you have to surrender yourself and your mind, your consciousness, into a moral and ethical and religious type of organization with philosophy, principles, and strict ideas of what you should do and what you should not do. And these things kind of make one feel comfortable because one doesn't have to think too much. One just surrenders oneself to a system whereby things are a certain way. It seems to come from God, and therefore it's authorized, and we know what to do and what not to do. We feel comfortable. A lot of our anxiety is taken away. Now, there are a lot of people in the world who still like to do such a thing. But there are increasingly more and more people who, although they like to have affiliation with such religions, they don't like to be restricted. So they become more and more on the edges of their religious system. And then there are those spiritualists who don't want to be part of any religious organization, don't want to be restricted in that particular way. So they have their own independent way of seeing spirituality. For them, life is more complex than for other people in this group of religionists because they have now personal responsibility that is very highly motivating and very essential for their survival in their spiritual fields. I'd like to speak today about something which is usually not known, something which is rather esoteric. You may or may not believe it. But the reason I'm going to explain it is because I see that it really exemplifies the problem of personal responsibility in terms of ethics and morality in a very clear way. And for those of you who have been with us for quite some time now, you have obviously developed capacities to perceive some, if not all, of what I'm going to speak about, and therefore the topic of ethics and responsibility is a very important one. So what I'm first going to do is explain this example of what's going on, and then I'll explain how or the reasons for why they used to have societies which required initiations, which required entrance and trials and tests to be known as one of the members or the fellows or something like this. Now, just beyond the field of the physical plane, there is a whole other dimension that has layers to it according to the capacity of the people who perceive it. I'll give you an example to help you understand this. Just let's say you're in a room and there's two children, let's say they're 4 or 5 years old, and there's adults talking and they're making adult kind of jokes about, let's say, sexual matters or something that the children don't pick up on. So from the children's point of view, they're laughing and joking with their friend. And from the parent's point of view, they're laughing and joking, seemingly in the same kind of mood, but on an entirely different level and about entirely different subjects. So although they're in the same space, and although they're directly connected with each other physically, their consciousness is not actually connected because they're on different levels of perception. I am not saying one is higher or a more aware level of perception than the other. Not at all. What I am saying is that they are different. They have different ideals. They're looking for different things, and therefore they're not connected. Just add into that room two professional boxers having a discussion over in this corner and two professional astrophysicists having a conversation in this corner. So you can, in that room now, have four separate kinds of associations, all in the same room. They're sharing the same space, but their consciousness are on totally different levels. And each person in that room chooses how to connect to the consciousness of another person according to reasons which they feel comfortable with. So although these different people are in different parts of the room, every now and then when there's something which relates to the other, they can connect. Let's say, for example, the boxers get very angry with each other and start physically putting energies on each other. Everybody in the room can perceive that. We don't really understand how that happened. We don't really understand the power which is being unleashed. But we do understand the anger. So we perceive the anger, not necessarily the details surrounding it. And then, let's say in that sexual conversation between two people that the children are somehow in the same room. But if it did start manifesting some way, the children would be aware something's going on. They may not be fully aware what that something is, but they know something's going on. When the astrophysicists start developing a new theory and they jump into something so incredibly exciting that their excitement and energy just overflows, everybody becomes aware that some fabulous new thing is being developed over here, but they're not very aware of any other detail than that. Now, the reason I'm explaining this is to show that even though we share the same space, we do not necessarily share the same consciousness, neither do we share the same perception of the energies which are unleashed by our consciousness. For understanding all of this, we depend totally on our own evolutionary development, our own development as individuals. So similarly, when we are in these realms outside of the physical, and I'm talking about any realm just beyond the physical plane, there is a very large space, etheric space, within which many different kinds of interactions and relationships take place. It is not that just because you have the capacity to enter into that space that you are therefore somehow super qualified beyond anyone else. On the contrary, your personal responsibility, your personal ethics are very much that which directs what you do and how you do it in that space. Now sometimes, rarely, there are associations and societies of people who work in that space yet have the ethic developed to regulate certain aspects of the work in that space. We know that in the groups of people who were working with Daskalos, that Cypriot healer, or in certain theological societies or other organizations where very etherically capable, very esoterically minded people get together to do good for the world. And in such societies or with such personalities, they are taught, they are given, they are instilled with the ethic of how to act and why they should act in that particular way. In other words, great knowledge is given to them along with their skills and abilities. I know the example in Daskalos's group where one of his associates in that group had started using his capacity to astral travel to go to the homes of his young female students and capture them in locations and in situations which were, not the usual. And therefore, Daskalos and his group threw this man out because he was using his powers in an improper way. Now, that did not stop that man from doing anything, but it did stop that man from associating with the group. So that really, it doesn't really help all that much in, as far as the rest of the world is concerned. In any such group or any such organization which tends to restrict people's actions, the only success it can have is the degree to which the individual wishes to follow that restriction. But that's not the only kind of a problem. Here's other problems. There are those who are in the esoteric realm who know how to influence the lives of others. They know how to put thoughts or suggestions into the lives of others and manipulate situations. They know how to do it, and they think, because I know how to do it, I'm qualified to direct other people's lives because I'm better than them because they don't know how to do it. There are those who know how to heal. There are those who know how to project their energy for the good of others. But the exact same energy of healing, twisted by a distorted mind or distorted heart, can create damage to others, can give them pain, can give them physical difficulties. No matter how much you know, no matter how your esoteric capacity may increase, it is still ruled and guided by the level of your consciousness, by the evolution that you have in your heart. There are things which never change, and one of those things is human nature. That nature is that if I have the capacity to lord it over someone else, then I have a certain possibility to do so. And if it's my nature to do so, I will do so. And my justification for doing so is simply the fact that I can. In other words, might makes right. And if I'm sure that what I do is right and good for you because I can do it, then any way I choose to do it is good ultimately because the ends do justify the means. These are medieval principles that are being applied in thousands of situations all the time today. There are people who have esoteric capacities who you can go and you can pay them some money and they'll cause harm to another person. As their business, it's their occupation. They justify it by saying, I can do it and I need the money. Everybody needs money. This is the way I make it. Now on the level of the esoteric realm and the etheric field, there is no regulation. There is no law that has to be followed. There, you can easily see that everything is what you make it. And similarly here on this platform, everything is what we make it. It is what it is according to the way we make it, but not entirely. And it's also not entirely that way up there. For example, even though I have the capacity to take physical materials and turn them into other kinds of building blocks, like to make bricks or make cement or make asphalt, and put that where I want, I can't, for example, lay an asphalt road in the sky or put it on water because there are physical laws which I have to deal with. There are physical laws, there are social laws, economic laws, things which either if you do it the right way, it works. If you do it the wrong way, it doesn't work. Just like if you put asphalt on the water, it sinks. So if you are sending various forms of energy to people whereby they are receiving impetus from the energies of these etheric realms, yet they don't know the different laws by which these realms are limited, a lot of problems can occur. I'll give you an example. In these realms, the etheric realms, what energies you send out, you are. Not only do they come back to you in the reciprocating way of the etheric realm, but you are those energies. You directly are those energies because it is your energy that creates it. It means it is you. You bring out hate, you are that hate. And that hate that you give out or you are attracts like energies because like attracts like. So there are laws which do indeed regulate the activities, the events, the situation of the realms of the etheric nature. But we who are more, shall we say, children within that realm, are not aware of the regulating principles. And therefore, we may act in ways which we think are very powerful, but which actually turn around and destroy us. And if we enter into realms whereby we are not wanted, we are a disturbance, we are causing a great harm, or attempting to cause great harm with our energies which are not very evolved, there are more powerful energies there which will immediately come and stop us, cut us down in ways which are not possible in the physical realm. In the physical realm, if you want to cause trouble to another person, you have to physically find some way to cause trouble, come physically in contact, which can take days or months or even years, you know, if you don't know where they are, or you have to make a legal case against them, or you have to make a lot of politics against them. It takes a lot of time. It's not an instantaneous effect. It's often not even possible to do. In the etheric realm, you simply have to will it to happen. You simply have to project it to happen. It is immediately taking place. And because it is immediately taking place, the reactions to it, the consequences of it, also come very rapidly. There are many persons who don't have the qualification, who try to enter into the esoteric realm, who make themselves more and more crazy because they have no capacity to deal with the freedom and they have no personal development to take the responsibility to act in a proper way. Now, there are incredibly unintelligent people who don't understand the ethic of power. Let's use a very simple example. Let's say you're a skinny person, not very many muscles, and you come up before a very big, strong person, and you have some power, right? You have some power. You're not powerless. You have some power. You have a little bit of muscle. You have some strength. And you go up and you punch the big, powerful person. Now, that foolish act can really put you at risk. If that powerful person is annoyed that day or is not in a good mood, he has the potential basically to crush you immediately, physically. So we have this situation where a foolish person who has some power doesn't know why he should use it, how he should use it, the risk or the reaction by using it. Now, as far as I've seen, most powerful people like that have a certain amount of self-control. Somehow developing their power and everything has given them a certain amount of self-control. So if some person who's not very significant comes up and harms them, they may not retaliate. They may simply stop them, but they may not retaliate because personally they don't feel like they should do like that. But if that same skinny fellow were to do the same thing to the wife of the big person, that big person would immediately crush the little fellow without even thinking about it. So the ethic that the person may have in regard to himself, the big person, of being controlled and using his power only when it is required, would prevent him from reacting on something of himself, against himself, but would immediately motivate him to action in protection of another. Yet there are people in the etheric realm who work in the etheric realm, who have capacity in the esoteric realm, who are very skinny. And they go after indiscriminately others because they don't see the relative strength or capacity of others. Now they know that others are there, just like in that room example I gave in the beginning. They are aware that there are others there, but they have no capacity to connect to what those others are. So they act in this realm, thinking themselves an equal partner in the esoteric realm, but they act without the knowledge or the development or evolutionary ethic, which puts them in the right position. And periodically, they are destroyed. Periodically, they are ruined in their capacities to act esoterically. And there is a system of divine justice whereby the forces of regulation within the universe do not allow somebody to misuse the energies the universe is offering for a long period of time, for it is coming back into balance at one point. Physical energies can go out of balance, and it can take a long time. It could even take geological ages by which this balance can be restored. But on the etheric platform, energies tend to balance very rapidly. It's not something that takes a long time. Instead of geological ages, it's something which could take days or weeks or months or maximally years. So this ethic or morality that I was talking about is not so much a system by which you regulate and force people to be a certain way, as it is a means by which people understand how to achieve success in what they are trying to do. It's a very different way of looking at things. So therefore, we don't speak in terms of you must do this, you should do that, you have to do that. But rather, one speaks in terms of this way of acting would grant you that result. This way of acting will grant you another result. And each of these ways of acting have their own benefits. They have their own significant results, which cannot be attained by doing things in the wrong way, by doing things in the improper way or wrong way or a way that doesn't work. So if you just consider the point that as you send out a particular kind of energy, you become that particular kind of energy. So similarly, you should consider that it's important to learn the ethic of how to act, because it will make your actions more beneficial to yourself. Ethic. Now, the reason ethic exists, and this is a very important point, the reason ethic exists the way it does is because it protects us who are having these capacities. Just like the admonition or the rule, don't put your hand in fire, protect you from burning your hand. So in the same way, the ethic that is there amongst those who are of esoteric capacity keeps them from getting burned in the fire of improper activity. And therefore this kind of internal regulation protects ourselves and at the same time serves to protect all others in the world. It's an amazing thing that when you cause pain to another person on the etheric platform, what happens is that you share that pain. It starts to become part of your life. It starts to grow on you like a kind of etheric cancer. Therefore, one has to always, if one wishes to succeed in his endeavor in that realm, try to act for the good. Now, don't make the mistake of thinking, just because I serve God, or I serve some guru, or I serve some priest, or I serve some cause, that makes me good, that makes everything I do good. Don't make that mistake. The ethic is yours alone. That what you do has to be seen in each individual case. It doesn't matter who you do it for or why you do it. Now that is a very, very important thing to understand. Because when you understand this, you will understand what it is that makes the your universe, your personal universe, tick. Your personal universe tick, makes it work, makes it function, your personal universe. I tried to make this point. I mean, perhaps it's not the most important point. I think it is, though. I think it's important because, you know, I feel responsible that I give you techniques which can be misused. And I think it's responsible because sometimes you get burned misusing these techniques. I'm not talking about morality. Devendra was asking me here. I think he was using the word moral in the sense that I don't mean it. I don't mean morality in the usual sense of the term, that you have to act in a certain way and that's right, and if you act in another way, that's wrong. I'm not referring to that. I mean it in sense that, well, if I was someone else, and someone else was acting towards me in the way I'm acting now, would I be happy with it? And I think that's a very important spiritual principle. Would I be happy with if I'm someone else and I'm that receiving what it is I'm doing, would I be happy with that? Well, that's not so easy to answer. One has to be able to understand another person's situation. Maybe I would be happy with it, but is the other person happy with it? Is the other person happy with my interference in their lives? That's a very, very important question. How do I know what's better for someone else? How can I say, I know better than you what's right for you? And because I'm so convinced I know what's better for you, that I shall use power to push you in a certain direction of action. And if I push you into a course of action which I think is right, and you feel very disturbed by this, how is it right for you? Even a person who's a healer, but who puts their own particular idea of healing into a person without considering the person's needs, is doing harm to another, an injustice, in fact.
It's from a lady here in the audience. She's asking, when we think badly about someone within our heart, like cursing somebody for something, is it affecting etheric plane? And what are the ways to correct it if later on we understand that we were not right?
That's a very interesting question. Why don't you put that in Russian? I think that question is interesting from two points of view. The first point of view being that, well, things don't exactly work the same on this level as they work on the other level. And the second point being the effect of our energetic thought processes. On this level, simply thinking badly about other people or projecting hatred at other people, it has an effect, and it's an important thing to consider because it affects you. It turns you into something else. It affects you biologically. It affects you emotionally. It churns up your energy within. And even though you may not intend it to be so, you are sending that hatred towards somebody because that person that you're sending it to is the object of your hatred. Now, if that object of hatred is being improperly accused or being improperly hated, in other words, you're hating them for something they didn't do, your energy will not really stick to them. For example, if you hate me because I stole all your money, for instance, and I didn't steal all your money, your hatred is not going to imprint upon me. It's not going to be an energetic thought form which is going to affect me. Naturally, if I meet you and you send me these negative feelings and energies, I'm going to notice that something's wrong here, but it's not going to really have a significant effect on me otherwise. Now, even more interesting, if I believe that I did it, even if I didn't do it, there are circumstances where I may think that I have harmed somebody when I really didn't, and the other person may actually think that I harmed them when actually I didn't. But if we both believe it to be true, the energetic effects will be there. It will be there. It will affect us both. Now, on the esoteric platform itself. Now, of course, these distinctions I am making, they're rather artificial, but we have to talk about things in some way. So when I say things like the higher platform or esoteric platform or etheric platform, I'm talking the beyond physical, when you are working outside of your bodily energies but working with your etheric capacities. But when on that level, however you want to call it, I project an energy to somebody, that works differently. It doesn't really matter so much whether they deserve it or not. that energy will go there because that's the nature. There's no that filter is no longer there in the same way. It would be the same as if somebody who thought you were doing them wrong physically were to hit you, even if they were wrong. You don't really have that filter system. It would really hit you. They would hit you because it's a physical thing. Similarly up there, it would be the same kind of a force. And therefore, it is very important that we have this ethic. We have this understanding of what is right, why we should act, and how we should act. Because you can very seriously damage somebody. Now, of course, there are other filter systems. For example, if you are doing that to somebody who is too dull to experience what you are doing, in other words, they aren't on that wavelength at all, your energy would have to filter into a physical platform to affect them. If you don't filter it, it wouldn't affect them. And therefore, there are systems by which you can translate the etheric energy into physical energy using an interface, you know, like voodoo or something like that. You use an interface to translate your etheric to the physical. But you didn't ask about that. You just asked about the sending out of energy. That works in a different way. And if the person has no capacity to feel energy, in other words, they are not somebody who works on that platform, it will not affect them. Now, if it is somebody who can work on that platform, and what you are doing is right, in other words, I did something bad to you, you are now sending me all that hatred and anger, then I might just accept that. Because according to my ethic or my personal understanding of things, I may understand very well that I should. But then again, I may think that I should not. And I will react against you very rapidly, and you will also have a reaction. But you asked about what happens on this platform. So then we can answer, well, all right, if there's no reason to hurt such a person, which is why you asked in the first place, then it will not affect them, so you don't really have to do anything to change it. But ethic, personal ethic, would dictate that it is the proper thing to do. And when you talk about ethics, you talk about proper things. The proper thing to do would be to go and explain yourself to the person and apologize and explain why you did what you did and why it was wrong and try to get some understanding with the person. And to volunteer to rectify any damage you might have done, which is a very important thing. Just words is one thing, but rectifying the damage by actually doing something significant that the other person requires is really a superior ethic that is rarely used. So I hope I have explained the different ways in which that works. Have I answered the question satisfactorily? Is it? Okay. Here's another very interesting question. This person is asking, if they try to develop some esoteric quality, for example, as a healer, or in some other way of being an assistant, you can. And I try to develop myself, but some higher authorities or more powerful authorities will try to stop me because I'm not ready to do it and I won't get a result. How would I know if it's actually better for me to stop because I'm doing some mistakes, or how do I correct myself and do it in the right way? Now, that's a very important question because it brings out two important things. That number one, you try to do something, maybe you are interfering or doing it wrong, and if you feel that you are being stopped because of that, what to do about it and how to do it the right way? That's a good question, yet at the same time, it's a very... It praises you because you are so lucky that you have guides that stop you. Not only do you have guides who care about you so much that they try to stop you, but that you accept that you are aware of that, and that you are allowing them to do so because you care about their feedback to you. That's very rare. If guides were to sit around in the guide cafe in in the etheric land, they would sit around and perhaps say things like, you know, this person just doesn't hear me. And the other one said, yeah, I know, they don't. And they don't want to hear. Isn't that horrible? Because often the biggest problem is not to find guides. They're always there. But to actually care enough about yourself to actually accept their guidance, to hear them. And if they are speaking to you, to be respectful enough to understand that what they are saying to you is very important, to accept the weight of the influence upon you. It's very important. Because when one can do that, one accepts that weight, one accepts that influence, then one's whole life can transform in a very, very, very positive evolutionary manner. I find myself in a similar situation. I find myself before my deities. I say, Radha Shyam, please guide me. Please guide my life, direct me, give me inspiration, give me, even show me the way by which I may be of service. Sometimes people ask, what are the principles of the ethic? What are the principles of the morality within that framework of ethics? And I say it all boils down to one principle, really. It boils down to the principle of wishing to be of service. And that means to understand the person in front of you, understand what their needs are, understand what their desires are, what is best for them, and then try to be of assistance for them according to their needs in a spiritual way, according to your capacity. When you are thinking, I know better, I know what is right, I know what's right for you, and you should do what I think, or I will serve you according to what I know is best, or what I think God wants, or whatever, then you're not actually being of service. And therefore, when we talk about this one ethic of being of service, it actually includes all of the ethical principles required to react or to relate or to assist another human being. Now, when you think about that, that is a very, very, very significant, regulative principle or regulatory principle that comes directly down to your integrity as a human being and your accepting the integrity of other human beings. And when you have this feeling, this experience and this realization of regulating all that you do within this framework of being of service, then your ethical principles can be very, very highly developed. Now, I know that usually anything that's regarding spirituality, especially that which used to be in terms of religion, would almost always have some understanding that all these principles of what you should do and what you should not do are very strictly defined, and that's a very important part of the whole religious quote-unquote process. But I think, me personally, that this is not something which is really the essence of spirituality. It really has nothing to do with the essence of spirituality. It is simply a means of being of service to help people regulate themselves for their own evolution. But if these regulative principles, so to speak, or these regulative situations have actually very little or nothing to do with the person's own life. In other words, it is not something that is significant within the life of the person. It can be more of a harm than a good. Therefore, I don't feel like giving such kinds of principles. And I've been asked a lot of times, tell us what to do, what not to do. That's not the way to do it, I feel. The way to do it is to give everybody the understanding that there is one principle and one principle only. How to be of service. And one simply has to know how that is done. Now here's another question which is exactly in this line, and I think it's very good to answer it. This person is saying that they got two different answers, or they have been able to give two different answers to questions of a friend. But that friend can't accept these answers. Now the friend wanted to get the answers, but can't accept them. So how can we who are answering questions help that person? Well, that's very interesting because it's the same thing, isn't it? Somebody asked me a question, but doesn't really want to hear the answer, isn't it? Or maybe they do want to hear the answer, but the answer I give them is not something they want to hear. I think I have misunderstood the question. Therefore, everybody over there is hysterically writing on the keyboard. Wait, 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 I hear them saying. Saint Germain. Ah, it was an archangel type. So who got the answer from Saint Germain?
Myself. I was just asking him for my friend, and she had some questions, but she couldn't realize. She couldn't just accept not one, not another.
So what happened was your friend wanted an answer, and you were able to get an answer from Saint Germain. And when you gave the answer that Saint Germain gave you to your friend didn't like it. Is that the question?
No, it was not. She accepted, but she can't choose what to do. She can't follow.
Okay, that's another situation entirely. In that situation, you're getting, according to what you think now, an answer from Saint Germain, or maybe two different answers from Saint Germain. You're giving those answers to another person. The other person can't decide what to do, can't figure out what to do, or can't accept it even. Now, it may seem on one level, oh, that's a serious problem. This person's not accepting. Yet on another level, it may not at all be a problem. It may not at all be a problem because sometimes you say things, or sometimes even some very significant things are said to a person, but it takes a while for these things to germinate within the heart. It takes a while for these things to become established in the heart. Just like you plant a seed, it may take months before the seed comes up, and it may take even years before it becomes fructified. It is not that in every case an answer brings an action. In some cases, something you say or something you hear can start a process. Even if you don't accept it, it can start a process. And don't forget, personalities like Saint Germain or Michael the Archangel or any personalities like that who are so incredibly powerful, they are very patient as well. They don't expect at all times that they simply say something or they give an energy or they give an influence and it immediately manifests in action. They're very patient. They can wait. And it may take years. It may take years before such fructification or germination of that seed-like thought process can manifest. It is not that these things happen instantaneously because influences are subtle and people change gradually, especially when they're being affected by archangelic energies. It's a gradual and deep transformation. In the meantime, while I'm waiting for this text to come to me, somebody wrote here that they said they heard that gossip is healthy. And what do I think about that? I read that same article. It was on Microsoft Network where they were saying that gossip sometimes fills functions which ordinarily people don't have access to certain information. Like, for example, if you are to talk openly about somebody, you don't speak about things which you are too embarrassed to say about them. So you can find out the truth, or so to speak, about others through this gossip network. At least that was the thesis of that article on Microsoft Network, that gossip was giving people access to information they wouldn't ordinarily have access to about people or about things in their office or about family or neighborhood situations. And therefore, because of that, gossip has some function, according to this person. However, in another sense, gossip can also be very destructive when it doesn't fill a role of filling in spaces in the information network, but adds disinformation into the information network. So to make an absolute principle that gossip is healthy, no, I don't agree with that at all. In some cases, it serves some functions. In other cases, it serves a dysfunction or a disservice to people. Now, back to the other question about getting guidance from the great personalities. This seems to be amusing, and I'm not sure if I read it properly, but another person asked for guidance and help and got so much of it, everything they wanted, that now they don't have time to sleep. And then they say, what have you done to me? And so why is it so different in these two cases that some person is in such a long-term track, another person is in a very hectic short-term track? Now that's, of course, again, it's not that the influence from such personalities has to be something that germinates, has to be something that takes a long time. Again, it's only depending on the receiver. Some people are not ready for such intensive input into their lives. Other people are completely begging for such input into their lives. However, neither of them may understand the implications of getting that input into their lives. Those who are expert in dealing with these energies have written in different books, and I have only a small amount of experience with this, so in this case I will quote what they were saying. They say that these personalities in these realms do not really understand the effect of how they input into our lives. They are very powerful. They don't really understand completely that their small input can have such a huge effect on our lives because they don't feel things in the same way we do. Therefore, in some cases, it's very important to avoid requesting immediate interference into your life because you're not exactly sure how that will manifest. It's a risky thing. Therefore, me personally, I take the tactic of saying, well, guide, give guidance, give help, give assistance. Not that, you shall totally take over and manifest everything in my life like immediately, because that's dangerous. That's like saying, okay, throw me this atom bomb here and I'll deal with it. And then you get it and you say, ah! So one has to be a little bit sensitive about the power of these personalities. We're dealing here with very, very powerful personalities. And we should respect their inputs in that way. We should respect their energies in that way so that we can avoid being burned up in that. Anyway, we are not dealing with dangerous personalities, of course. But still, I mean, the point I was trying to make is that sometimes we can get over our heads. Here's another question. Sometimes people act towards this person enviously or hatefully, and then they themselves expand their own problems. But the hated party doesn't want anything bad for them. So how do you explain this? This person, let me talk. He says, I'll do it from the I point of view. It's easy to understand. He says, some people in my life have acted enviously or hatefully towards me. But I see that this causes great problems in their own lives. But I don't want something bad for them. So how is this to be explained? So in such a consideration, you can see exactly that what you give out is what comes back to you. When you give out hatred, hatred comes back to you. You give out love, love comes back to you. It's the circle of energy, the preservation of energy that is operating here. And in this preservation of energy, the problem is it's a circuit. So when people understand that as they do to others, they are doing to themselves, because in reality there's only one of us, the whole world can transform. But then there's the question, has somebody the right to desire something bad for another, knowing that it will be good for them? Well, this is the same dilemma that every parent has when their children are acting insanely, and the parent gives them a slap on the face to straighten them up. It is the question of, to what degree can I punish to correct? And that only you can understand, according to your experience, according to your culture, according to your consciousness. Here's another question that once a person was healed by the archangels, a cancer was burned away, and they even had a medical evidence that it disappeared, but a few weeks later it came back. So how to understand this? Well, hey, I mean, we're dealing here with trying to change from above destiny below. What if the cancerous condition was created by the person themselves? When the person themselves brings upon themselves the situation, no amount of healing is going to cure them, because one has to oneself create the healing situation and use the assistance of others. Nobody can be healed against their will. Nobody can be cured unless they participate in the cure. I think in that particular case, that's the relevant answer.